It is time for
roll the table one more time.
Time for the media beat with David Terrachuk. David, of course, joins us on a Friday morning, sometimes a couple of times on a Friday morning. You can find him, of course, at his own website, themediabeat.us. He's at Huffington Post. And also, ladies and gentlemen, a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And pretend you didn't hear that before. Good morning, David.
Good morning, and I'm happy to be reporting into you from the media capital of the world, where communications are always good, of course.
Of course. We've noticed that so well. So, by the way, we've got a lot of great response, to your last report with the tanks rolling in and you reporting from Carlisle. So, just like to
the
thank
the tanks
you.
Rolling in 50 years ago.
That's
I have
it.
To say. Yes, it's a long time. It's a long time since I did any tank rolling reports. And in fact, to be perfectly honest, it was not much of an eyewitness account since I was something like 2,000 miles away at the time. But yes, it was good to reflect on that.
It was a relevant connection, and because it was a relevant connection, I mean, I'm becoming totally boring. I will admit this up front. But I'm having a great deal of I'm encountering just a tremendous amount of frustration with the way that various stories, whatever they may be, in most cases, are attacked, if you will, if presented. I look at it as though if you have to cut a pie for, you've got eight guests and you've got a whole pie, you know, it doesn't necessarily, it's not as easy as it looks to cut it up all right. But you have to know where to make your slice. And the reason that I'm saying that is I'm finding that essentially across the boards, because of what has happened over time, the story isn't building sensibly so that you've got a good sense, a good idea of what's happening, but rather you're thrown into the middle of it and it's not related to anything. And we use the term context a lot, but I don't think that entirely covers it. And I
what sort of things are getting lost? Are you concerned about
intelligence, common sense, a neutrality, or a dispassion?
I think every media critic in the country, and indeed probably across the whole world, has as a top of its list in terms of complaints about the media would be the fact that there's been a loss of intelligence. Yes.
And what goes with that is, you know, this isn't just, oh, wow, I'm complaining in my little teeny studio in little teeny Sharon, Connecticut. In this past week, I would say four people who have consumed news with relish have thrown in the, it's just, hey, I don't want little Johnny the reporter's opinion at the beginning of the, you know, like how difficult it was for him to get to the place where he's doing the story.
And, oh, yes, that's a particularly tedious habit of a lot of reporters, yes. Let me tell you about my terrible time getting the story. Well, who cares? Let's have the story.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And
I'm with you on that.
And again, I don't know what to do about it because it looks like, you know, the biggies at least are all reporting the same thing with the same, you know, from the same perspective.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been prompted to think about this week, mainly because of some of the top level news events going on, that there is an art to finding exactly what angle you do cut the pie from, if I can borrow your analogy, what perspective you come at situation with, and what angle you're taking in terms of presenting something that does give the audience what you're bemoaning the lack of, which is a sense of how this might fit in, as it were, to the overall picture, the grand canvas, the overall canvas. And that's rarely done. But what I think it might be worth doing, certainly in the context of what we can do, emanating from Sharon, Connecticut, is just pick on examples of how well it can be done on occasions. here's what I'm thinking about this week, as we come to the end of it, to a very poignant, pointed end to it, really. As a long-time valued public servant, John McCain, I'm talking about, comes back to the nation's capital today, in a casket, of course, for a full panoply of honors and then be buried. The current president of the United States goes on, guess what? A media flurry. That's the currency of exchange now. In this case, the flurry is a fairly typical one, except that, you know, it suddenly seems very busy. Presidential interviews, left, right, and center. Never about McCain, of course, whom he disrespects, to use one of his own favorite rather ugly terms about how badly he gets treated. And instead, giving, I guess, policy interviews, left, right, and center. Well, that's probably a bad description. Right, and right, center, I'd say. You know, Fox and Bloomberg News. And we see in these interviews an almost desperate attempt to wrestle back the nation's attention. I think we know it's been very well established over the 2 years we've had this now, this current president of the United States can't stand attention being diverted from him and devoted to something else, particularly not something else which is remarkably different from himself. I mean, the one of the messages coming loud and clear through the whole experience, the nation's experience of John McCain's death, is how different the two individuals are, John McCain and Donald J. Trump. And not only were the media interviews, and by the way, in those interviews we learned that his own attorney general is not going to get fired. Oh, this is the latest thing. I think the head of Jefferson Sessions can rest a little easy now, do you think? Or is this the fact that the president says that he's not going to fire him now means that, well, he is going to fire him?
Well,
not until after the midterm elections. You get my point, that here is the media falling into what
reporting
was clearly
on themselves,
designed as an ego exercise by the chief executive, and that's the last thing we want the media to do.
But you know, you mentioned comparing the character and the body of Donald Trump and John McCain, and what is being lost in translation and over glorified. First of all, the media is glorifying John McCain as a saint. He's not a saint. He was a crafty politician who was true an American hero because he fought in war. He was a POW and he came back. And then he decided to take the rest of his life and go into public service. And I know folks are going to laugh at me, but representing your state in government is
public
service.
Service
at its almost highest level. And you could do what I did, which is agree with what John McCain's policies are about 15 to 20% of the time. But I would still get a joy seeing the man do something he really loved, which was be in politics, helping America, and also his constituents and people. He was genuinely a happy man. If you take a look at every picture of Donald Trump outside of his rallies, he is not a happy man. He is not an enjoyable man. He does not come off the helicopter or the presidential plane with a smile. The only place he really smiles and feels happy are in his rallies. And it's just so obvious that the difference between the two people is absolutely
sure.
Stunning.
And and in addition to these interviews, of course, there was also a very typical Trump rally in Trump country in Indiana. And yes, indeed, it was a vast exercise in ego boosting for the president. At the end of it, we have it on good authority that his staff told him that the audience at this particular rally was the greatest, the biggest audience he's ever had in one of these post-election rallies. I wonder if that's true.
But here's what I want to ask both of you, because it's funny that everything you know, what is the most amazing thing about this man as president and the press is that everything has become a comparison to him. Everything.
Because he makes it that way. He compares himself to everybody.
So this was the question that I wanted to
ask. The problem is that the media goes along with
that's
that.
That's what was my question.
I had a feeling it might be.
Yeah. Really. Because simply, I mean, yes, 24 hours, if Oscar Wilde comparisons are odious, and yet.
But how can you not compare him when he.
So this was my question to David. All right, so you've got the McCain funeral. How can you not? I think that's a good question. How about if everybody
I was saying that one of the ways we can tackle the issue that you're concerned about is to look for examples of context giving, broad context giving, through the eyes of practitioners who do it well. And I want to commend a piece. I don't, generally speaking, go for the way that so often events get reported now, especially political events, with that sort of flavorsome quality that modern-day reporters are prone to do, which is, in fact, it's a derivation from a pretty long-standing practice of doing what we call color reporting. I like it when things get pretty well stripped down. And we get, you know, in the words of Sergeant Friday, just the facts, man, just the facts. But with a sense of how this does place the event being reported on in the broader context, which we're all anxious to have explained to us or have illustrated for us in a way that is telling. And I would commend the New York Times coverage of that Trump rally in Indiana, which draws out exactly what we're talking about the importance of the difference between these two characters, one of whom never gets named, by the way, in this article. McCain is never mentioned because, of course, Trump doesn't mention him, and that speaks loudly. It's one of those silences that speaks more loudly than any words could. About the change in political times and the temper of political times and the notion of what is valued now in our political times. The New York Times coverage of the Evansville, Indiana, was where the rally took place, and it's a wonderful piece of indicating what exactly the Trump approach is at a time when he clearly feels threatened. And there are all sorts of reasons for him feeling threatened, as we know. But, you know, the resort to the ego-boosting rally is a critical one, alongside the almost diuretic expression of whatever he's got on his mind at the moment in media interviews, often contradictory. All of the, you know, contradictory and confusing, well, not just confusing, but self-incriminating in some ways too. But that's the background. What is in the foreground of this article is what is said, and of course, as I say, what is not said in the rally. It was a one way of looking at it, if you like, and this is something. The Times reporter Katie Rogers says the day offered a kind of split screen effect with the McCain tributes being made on one side of the screen and this Evansville rally on the other. Great points were made, not in a heavy-handed way, but in a way which makes clear very, very precisely the contrast involved and the change in the whole sense of how politics are conducted now.
Yeah, and I think that's just, again, it's important for everyone with active brain cells to ask themselves as they are reading something or looking at something, well, what isn't in here?
Sure. And there are very clever writing hints in this piece that it is. The it's now a set piece for Trump rallies, but it's an important one to report, no matter how familiar it might seem, that he gets down to the business of berating the press and getting the audience to boo and catcall about the press. And, you know, and there's a reminder there that, that his approach is to treat the press as enemies of the people, an ominous phrase in itself. But when it's taken to this almost kind of new, I don't want to go down the road of Weimar Republic and then early days of Nazism road, but there is a sense here of any incipient dictatorship needing to rally people in a hysterical way, and that's what's going on in many of these rallies.
And then the other aspect, unfortunately, not having to do with the rally per se, but having to do with the way the information is presented, is because when something happens that doesn't favor whichever side you're listening to, isn't reported upon, it makes it really imbalanced, because you end up actually dividing people. Most humans, I have found, are capable of intelligent, if given the information, making a decent decision. If given all the information.
Well, that's the assumption on which decent discourse is conducted, or always has been conducted.
Right, but sadly...
In a democratic society,
you
absolutely.
Really believe that?
What?
I do. I'm an old-fashioned public square person. I really am. Yeah.
I used to be, but there is no longer a public square.
I know it's a hard position to maintain these days.
There is no public square anymore. For too long, people by the media have been segregated into two groups.
That doesn't mean that everybody went.
But
I think that's an important idea to hold on to.
But
Jill's idea. Not everybody's gone that way. It seems as if they have.
Yes,
enough. 35-40% have gone.
That's the reporting.
True, but it remains less than half. And last time I checked, the democracy needs more than half.
Yeah, but the other
half population to be going in one direction.
The other 70% has to get involved.
It certainly has to get involved.
That's all I'm saying.
There's enough of us to be who can take thoughtful decisions in the end and not be swayed by the simple tribalism that is dividing everyone else. Don't you agree?
I would take my statement back if more people got involved who are sitting on the sidelines and actively involved in what is going on in the world. And
I don't care
whether they're Republicans, Democrats, Independents, elephants, whatever. That would make me feel much better, and I would agree with your comments.
But
that
here is my issue with that, and let's go back to Bernie Sanders for 1 second. The coverage of Bernie Sanders Bernie Sanders in the primary in 2000, whatever the heck it was, didn't even, this was all going on. Crowds were building. People were going. There was energy. No one covered it.
Because why? Who got all the coverage?
It doesn't matter.
Who got all the coverage?
That's not my point.
My point is, by Donald Trump getting all the coverage, conditioned the American public to what is happening now.
That was...
Yes, I think it's clearly, in large part, a responsibility of where the media shone its spotlight. There's no question about that. And now we're having to live with the results. And one of the interesting things is that the media, in certain areas at least, has learned that lesson. And guess what? Many of the salient policy points that Sanders was promoting or trying to promote against a pretty heavy headwind and a lack of attention from the mainstream media, is that those issues are now becoming mainstream discussion points in the nation as a whole.
And much of the primary campaigning
that's been going on is focused on them. And I suspect that in the midterm elections, some of them will start to be very important vote swingers as well.
And also, and this is the frustration, we've got 2 minutes left, but, it's because it's reported from different sides, not from the middle. There is such a dearth of reporting on like, what are these people doing every day? They go to work, so therefore things are getting done. And to that point, I had a friend who in the past week has basically been in New York, just pretty much around the world, and he was really struck to find that when he was just dealing with people, they were pretty normal.
Sure. I think we are. Yeah. I mean the most generic kind of we there. Yeah.
I mean, people weren't sitting home drooling and sharpening their... They were, you know, doing their best and had a pretty, again, rounded view of things. Well-rounded, I should say.
Sure. And what happens is that they turn on their devices of various kinds and they're assaulted by almost cartoonish presentations of people being the very opposite of considered and reflective and just knee-jerk, tribalistic, chanting crowds of... Well, for example, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up, whenever a certain person's name is mentioned. That kind of almost brutish conduct of supposedly the affairs of the nation is the very opposite of what we know most people are capable of.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.